I love starting projects. I do love finishing them, but starting them has its own particular qualities I enjoy. I like looking out over a field of possibility, coming up with the parameters of what I expect things to be, and then slowly working at them, finding out where fantasy hits reality, where potential hits the day-to-day needs of it, and then at some point realizing, looking back, I've taken many of the steps to get to the top of the mountain. I've started off on a project as of this month, and it's called Project Everything. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Project Everything has actually been festering in my mind for a couple of years now, in that way that when you start off working on things in some area, you realize there's a logical conclusion to all this. But it's very intimidating, and maybe you don't have to think about it right now. If you're lucky, you can pass it off to someone else. But then, as you make more and more progress, you're going to have to take it on. Project Everything became very obvious during the 2019 Kansas Fest. I've talked about Kansas Fest before. It continues not to disappoint. I had a resolution this year. I'd been doing a lot of work for Kansas Fest over the years, doing AV work or assisting with events, and a lot of that comes from love, from wanting to help people and make something even better by contributing my talent and time. But with the heart event in May, I've gotten a little bit worried about making people get dependent on me. Maybe it's morbid, maybe it's not really a positive thing to think about, but I tend to dominate projects. I'm very forceful, and I speak with authority, and after a while, folks can become extremely dependent on me doing a thing, with nobody else second in command, functioning as a backup, or otherwise informed how the thing is done. So I'd stepped back, and I wasn't doing AV. I wasn't running any projects. I had a talk that I was giving, and I had an experimental event I wanted to try out. But otherwise, it was going to be me socializing, maybe putting something neat on my residential door, like many folks do every year, and just getting around and talking to folks, a social instead of a structural event for me. I did not count, however, on a very specific situation rising up. A couple Apple II people had passed on, and their family had given Kansas Fest their full Apple II collections. Every year, the Kansas Fest team brings forward something called the Garage Giveaway, which is a contributed pile of Apple II technology that gets distributed to other members so that they can do experiments or get parts they otherwise wouldn't get their hands on. It's very endearing to watch, and it helps the community greatly. This tradition was supposed to be dying out with just a few items distributed each year, but 2019 suddenly found itself with almost as much material as any other year, including, I might say, a lot of software. Disks upon disks, floppy disks piled high, coming from a variety of locations, which I sort of suspect were computer stores that had long gone out of business and been stored away in attics and basements, passing between a few people, and now ending up in the lobby of the Kansas Fest building. A number of us use Kansas Fest as an opportunity to do disk imaging, thanks to technology like the applesauce and the efforts of many folks to improve analysis of Apple II disk images. A pile of floppy disks can become a pile of very useful, very flexible files in a very short time. We have the technology to turn a copy-protected Apple II disk into a 20-megabyte flux image that maintains all of the aspects of that disk and can be converted to a number of formats that retain the timing, the title screen, the music, all of the things that various crackers and pirates would strip out in the old days. It shouldn't surprise you to hear, there's a lot of software in the Apple II history that got distributed widely and were in fact modified, shortened, and incomplete versions of commercial products. Now, in 2019, we can take the entire original disc and make it available to people. But to do this, you need the disc to go into a drive and be read. Suddenly, Kansas Fest's lobby was full of what we thought were hundreds, but turned out to be thousands of floppy disks. What was meant to be a relaxing background attendance of a vintage computing event I love very much turned into one of my tougher work weeks in a while. We set up multiple imaging stations, ranging from 2 to 4 throughout the week. We moved them around so we could attend different talks or work into the night, and one by one, through piles and piles of floppy disks, we started to image them. Throughout the 5-day week, we imaged 1,500 Apple II disks, protected and non-protected, handwritten labels to professionally printed ones, games and educational software that had never been completely imaged and able to be distributed and studied. It was an unquestionable success. But as Kansas Fest started coming to a close, it was obvious that some of these discs were not going to be imaged in time. So, working with some great folks, and I'm going to call out Thomas Green as a tireless volunteer through all of this, we boxed up all of the unimaged floppy disks, and I've had them sent to a storage unit. By our estimate, this is well over 3,000 3.5-inch and 5.25 Apple II disks that I'm going to have to either go through or organize the imaging of by others. In other words, I went to Kansas Fest to take it easy, and it was as hard as it's ever been. Still, it was inspiring how the machine, running at full bore, could image floppy disks. At one point, we were doing new floppy disks every 20 to 30 seconds, pulling them out of their sleeves, reading them, getting the image, moving on. Setting up ways to verify the image, making sure that it was what it said it was, and then putting it away secure that it was going to survive another generation. Again, as I've mentioned elsewhere, the big problem with Apple II versus a lot of other microcomputers is that Apple II software could manipulate the disk drive reading head and make it do all sorts of strange things. So it's not just a matter of reading every disk the same. It's a matter of taking this incredibly complicated magnetic flux image and from that, interpreting it backwards to figure out what the disk actually is. This is what's held it back for so long. Commodore 64, Atari, BBC, ZX Spectrum, they've all had their formats figured out long ago, and disk images and cassette tape images have been done for decades. The Apple II was lagging, but we're trying to make up for it. With this amount of expertise behind it, things like John Morris's applesauce and 4AM's cracking and Qcumba's incredible behind-the-scenes analysis of this software, it's going to be a very impressive endeavor that I think we're going to do very well at, indeed. So well, in fact, that we're now moving to a phase that I think needs to happen. It shouldn't surprise you that software preservation is, like many other endeavors, totally full of controversy, differing opinions, groups who are trying to assert dominance, others that are just trying to get the job done, and a variety of debates going on as to what needs to be done, how, and where the funding and resources are going to come from. In the Apple II, I feel we have a very unique situation. Here's a computer system that was popular, but not too popular. Apple IIs were expensive. They were in schools, so a lot of kids used them, but it was expensive to have one in the house. They sold, but they didn't dominate. The software that was made for them was often very well crafted, but also very expensive. Naturally, this led to piracy, which meant that the programs got distributed but with incomplete data, and there were a number of publications, magazines, books, catalogs that would tell you all of the software that was available for the Apple II. Combining all this, we end up with something that I think we really need. We suddenly have a to-do list. We have an inventory of many of the programs for the Apple II, especially the commercial ones. We have thousands upon thousands of disks imaged, and we have a lot of lines out into people who have collections, who are slowly moving on them, but feel that a lot of their things are duplicates or not worthy of study. So, here comes Project Everything. The project that I've started to try to catalog, track down, and come up with the fates of every professional piece of Apple II software. It's easy enough to say, but the efforts behind it will be massive. It involves taking all of these documents that list what Apple II software was available, tracking down catalogs and listings in magazines, and then combining them to figure out what was out there. Where did it go? When was it available? There's places like Moby Games that focus on the games that came out for the Apple II, but there were many other genres. Engineering, mailing lists, word processing, agriculture, scientific study. They all had products for them for the Apple II, some with custom cards, some costing thousands of dollars. And there's never really been an attempt to figure out what made it through the decades. We know about some of this. We know that educational software had a really tough time. It was also really popular with teachers to pirate, so the companies came out with really good copy protection for them. The teachers didn't know what to do, and pirates, with all of the expertise, would have no incentive to pirate educational software. There was no way you were going to get onto a cool bulletin board or be able to trade with others with educational software. Who wanted any of that? So it was left behind. With the cases of scientific and business software, it was expensive to get a hold of, the audiences were tiny, so the chances they survived are almost nil. So let's do it. Let's make the list. Let's make a full accounting of all of the Apple II software, and then put it out there and figure out what we got, what we didn't, and what people can do to help us, along with understanding where software falls down and where we have to keep track of it going forward. I'm not calling it a holy grail, but I'll call it a silver chalice. The way that I set up a project like this is to reach out to various communication channels I have, a Slack here, a Discord there, and maybe a tweet, saying that I need help. Who will help me? The number of people who will step forward is relatively small compared to the number of people I can reach. I don't really harbor any bitterness or unhappiness about this. People have lives, and when you ask them to go into an open-ended project of strange parameters towards a goal that very few people consider important, I totally get that it's only going to be a handful of people. Those people are precious to me. They step forward, they say what needs to be done. Currently, we're using a Google spreadsheet. The main reason being that Google spreadsheets are very good for fast collaboration between geographically disparate people. Everybody gets to get in, everybody can see what they're doing, they can share notes, they can share what they're collaborating, and focus their efforts knowing that others are helping them. There's nothing more powerful than collaborating with folks aimed towards the same goal and coming back each time to find that things have improved. Our initial data set are two books, one 750 pages and one over 1,000 pages, called the Van Loves Apple II and III Software Directory. One came out in 1981, and its sequel came out in 1983, and they try to be the canonical directories of every piece of Apple II and III software available at that time. They've been scanned, OCR'd, and their data is being converted from a OCR text file to a structured set of data. Van Love's was a little bit funky. Sometimes they really worked hard with different sets of software. It's quite obvious that they gave it to a half dozen people, and each person had their own idea of what the book would be like. So as you go from subject area to subject area, you start to see different styles. Some folks make them little essays for each entry, while others just have the most bare of information, some of it obviously copied from the companies themselves. Some descriptions are third person, some of them are written obviously by the companies selling you on a product. In the 1983 edition, they claim they're going to come out with AppleWorks spreadsheets of updates about the programs. I don't see any evidence of this. Other groups stepped in with their own listings of Apple II software. Not all of these are online, but part of this project will be getting them online. At the end, we'll have at least some idea of the major programs that came out for the Apple II. After that, we start to cross-connect them. We see what's already up on the Internet Archive's emulation of Apple II software. We go to Mobi Games for the games. We do text searches inside of magazines that are on the archive to see where there's ads, to see where there's prices. We're going to build, as best we can, what all of this software does and whether or not it survived. As an aside, projects like this require an enormous amount of volunteer help. If I was to set off on this myself, to the detriment of everything else I do, it would take me years and years and years, and I wouldn't have anything else to show for it. Every time a person connects with me and adds to it, the project time becomes shorter. You spend a lot of time giving people hints on how to do this quickly. Folks ask questions about what would be appropriate. They want to do a lot of work, and sometimes only a minimal brush of effort is needed. You give encouragement. You let folks know that you're impressed with the work they're doing, and you ask them to come back day after day when they have the time. And that's the only way something like this could ever happen. People sometimes ask me what my secret is with volunteer labor, and the answer is simply respect. Respect that people have turned away from all the other things they were doing to help you with these projects. Respect the fact that their efforts, while sometimes not as good as others, are still somebody saying that you are worth their moments and their time. Respect the fact that not everybody is going to see the point of what you're doing. They may leaf off. They may suddenly find themselves unable to help, and you have to let them go. It's not their fault. They're not failing you. Sending out guilt and head games, that's not how to treat people who gave you the gift of what they were willing to do. It may not seem like much of a secret, but I'm really surprised how many efforts I've been involved in with other people in charge where that's not followed. So Project Everything launched last week and already has hundreds of entries in it. I want to see where it goes. I'm also imaging dozens of Apple II discs a day. Others are doing the same. We're bringing things online that were never part of the historical canon before. Project Everything is already bearing fruit. I've found multiple titles that exist only in this directory that maybe are stuck underneath a bunch of discs and which somebody out there will learn about and contribute to us knowing that they're going to play a part. It's not just an amorphous blob of please send me your things. It's now a direction, a way for them to leaf through their commercial products that they have been sitting on and find something that we are on the hunt for. And thanks to their generosity, are going to help them get saved. Where's it going to go? Beats me. Check back in another year when Kansas Fest 2020 happens. And I'll tell you where we're going to go. And maybe, just maybe, I'll have some very good news to report. This is Jason Scott, Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, James Bekoyanu, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. A short note about various debts. I have not been able to get the help with my medical bills that I expected, so I am directing all of my Patreon money to pay off the roughly $4,000 worth of medical bills I got from the heart stuff in May. It's not a lot of money by some standards, certainly not as much as it could have been. The total of the entire medical procedure was about $60,000 to $70,000, and so having to pay four of it, not so bad on a ratio, but nobody likes having an extra $4,000 they have to pay. It's because of this podcast that I don't have to think about it very hard. It means I have to keep an eye on my tax payments going forward. And frankly, I feel like medical expenses should be tax deductible, don't you? But the fact that this Patreon exists and enables me to take this medical bill off of my table, that means the world to me. And I thank you very, very much.